This episode is brought to you by Progressive. Most of you aren't just listening right now. You're driving, cleaning, and even exercising. But what if you could be saving money by switching to Progressive? Drivers who save by switching save nearly $750 on average. And auto customers qualify for an average of 7 discounts. Multitask right now. Quote today at Progressive.com. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. National average 12-month savings of $744 by new customers surveyed who saved with Progressive between June 2022 and May 2023. Potential savings will vary. Discounts not available in all states and situations.
We're here with Themis Claridis, former state rep, Republican leader in the House, and a former Senate candidate, key part of the 2017 deal that has put Connecticut on a really strong path financially, that it seems, Themis, everyone wants to spend that money now. Like everybody, like the Democrats want a $500 million fund in case, you know, whatever isn't coming through, whether it be shut down or cut. The Medicaid cuts, I think, are coming later in the presidential term. And then the Republicans are like, well, let's just cut taxes. If you're going to do that money, let's just cut taxes. And then you have $400 million bonded out for hospitals and this and that, and $100 million for the Connecticut Sun, maybe. Everyone wants a piece of the pie now. Are you in favor of any of it, or do you think everything should stay exactly as it is?
Well, we did what we did in 2017 with the budget because for years and years they had, you know, that you, I hate that phrase, kicked the can down the road. But they had every year that there was a need for money, like, we don't know where we're going to get the money. We'll take it from this pot, you know, like the tobacco settlement fund, right, or highway money, or right, things that weren't used for highways or tobacco settlement.
Yeah, there's Band-Aids everywhere.
Everywhere. Yeah. And so, you know, in 2017, we put together a budget that did the same thing you do in your home, right? I mean, we call them fancy names like spending caps and bonding caps, which are borrowing caps. But in your house, you know, I can only spend X amount of dollars or I won't be able to pay my mortgage and therefore lose my house.
Right.
Right. I can only borrow a certain amount of money. The bank will only give me this amount of money.
No, I get it. But
so we call those, and it's, they're important to stick to. Now, they are important to stick to. And I know, you know, you and I have had this conversation before. Does that mean forevermore you never change one penny of it? I'll give you an example. Something I do support is the governor announced on Monday that he is giving $3 million to Connecticut Food Share, which is the food bank for the state of Connecticut.
Right.
Because on Saturday, November 1st, there will not be any new money put into the SNAP program, which is our, you know, supplemental nutrition program that the federal government funds and gives people in every state who can't afford food because,
sure,
we have large insecurity. That is something I do support.
So let me, but the thing is, $3 million is nothing. And even Jason Jakubowski said it's just a sort of the tip of the iceberg thing. But $3 million is also a tiny fraction of the $4 billion. Mm-hmm. They could do so much more. And the issue is, I mean, if there are bigger hits from the federal government to come, is it the state's responsibility to fill that void is essentially the question.
I think each state has to make a decision.
What about
on,
here?
On their own. As far as our state, I mean, listen, food insecurity is a major deal. And you would imagine in the wealthiest state in the country, which Connecticut is, that we wouldn't have food insecurity in the amount that we do. I mean, it's unbelievable. I go around the state and
so
I work.
So you'd be in favor of giving more?
Well, I will tell you this. The governor and Food Share, and Jason Jakubowski does an amazing job as the head of Connecticut Food Share, which, so people understand, is the statewide food bank in Connecticut that works with 600 food pantries all over the state to make sure that people have not just food, but healthy, nutritious food, because there are so many people that just aren't eating. I mean, it's amazing when you think of all the things that we argue over. You know, what's a priority to you? What's a priority to me? What's a priority to Democrats? What's a priority to Republicans? People not going to bed hungry should be a priority for everybody.
So you'd be in favor of increasing that number?
Well, I think that we should be giving more money to our food pantries, therefore, you know, Food Share in general. I mean, we got money from the state this year, more money than before. And I'm thankful for that. And I think that should increase because when you talk about, you get elected to office, you take an oath. Like, what is your job as an elected official, regardless whether it's on the town level or the state level or the federal level? It's to keep people safe, to keep people healthy, you know, to keep your neighborhood safe, to make sure kids have a good education, basic things. And if people aren't able to go to sleep without being hungry, children are not being able to go to sleep without being hungry, then, you know, what is our job? if we can't say that that's our job. So the governor, you're correct. $3 million is a drop in the bucket for the next 2 weeks. And we are hoping that the shutdown ends sooner than later so things can move forward. But if they don't, then the governor and Jason will work on this every day.
So look, quick question. We have a bunch of stuff from sports betting to Senator Anwar to a whole bunch of different things, the housing bill, special session. I have John Larson. I got a lot of stuff.
Senator Anwar, seriously.
But, well, my thing with him is, listen, from a free speech perspective, he can do what he wants. I mean, cancel, you can't be hypocritical about cancel culture. The thing that bothers me is that, like, of course he shouldn't have done it. And of course he should apologize. And he accuses the other side of pearl clutching. I just think that that was tone deaf. Like, I think it was terrible. Like Comey with the 8647.
Right. I agree.
I just think that stuff, if you want to elevate things, be better. Just be better. And just say, you know what? It was a mistake. I didn't really understand it. I apologize. Why can't people just acknowledge when they screw up and say they're sorry?
We all have, okay? I mean, I have, other elected officials I know have. Sometimes people in this country are very forgiving, right? You say things, say, oh, it was the heat of the moment. I thought it was a joke.
They're forgiving to some people.
It really wasn't funny. I'm sorry, right? It would have been over. I mean, people would have still used it as political fodder, but it would have been generally over. I mean, people are human beings. They say stupid things. They regret them after
that.
What kills me with this guy is when Charlie Kirk was killed, I am sure that Senator Anwar was not a big fan of Charlie Kirk politically, right? We can assume.
It's a relatively safe assumption.
But, right, exactly. But his direct quote at that time was, political violence and all violence must be rejected without exception everywhere and at any time. Now, that was very good of him to say that because he's correct. I agree with that statement. And then, what, a month later? Cholesterol, do your job, with a big grin on his face. It's not like I had a Democrat friend of mine who said, well, you know, we need to be careful because anytime an elected official ends up standing next to a picture of something they can't get blamed for, I go, standing next to it. He was gripping it with all his life but with a big face, stop, and then posted it.
Even if they're standing next to it, the point is that if you screw up by standing next to it inadvertently, then just acknowledge that it shouldn't have been done.
But then he dug his heels in, blamed Republicans, and said it's faux, you know, outrage. What is that about?
Well, I think it's whataboutism is what it is. When you say, what is that about? That's exactly what it is. We'll take a pause here with Themis Claridis, former Republican leader in the House and former Senate candidate here on Bryan and Company. You know, we talk all the time, by the way. I know I ask you this every time. I'm not going to ask you now. We had to take a break. But the Republicans need more representation. You know, I'm just saying.
No kidding.
They need more representation in the state. And, I mean.
What's the question?
Well, the question
I said
is,
no kidding.
I know. So why won't you get back in the ring is the question. We're back here with Themis Claridis, former Republican in the state House of Representatives and former Senate candidate. Honestly, like I didn't intend to talk about this, but are you like actively trying to find Republicans to run? Because the Republicans seemingly should have a little momentum here between Pura and Diamantis and the housing bill. It feels like that there's been at least more adversity on the Democratic-dominated state level, and you would think that that would be maybe a chance to leverage something.
Well, we're always looking to find candidates. I mean, whether it's in the district in which you live, whether it's on, you know, the state level, the House and Senate Republican caucuses,
can't you find
actively.
Any?
Well, we do find people. That doesn't mean they win, right? I mean, I'll give you an example. When Bill Pettit retired, we didn't keep that seat. So that seat is in Democrat hands. I have heard from many people that the person who won that seat, now I have not worked with her, so I can't speak about, you know, her abilities, but not a lot of good reviews. So I know that people are looking for somebody to run for that seat. Now, does that mean, but it's more of a Democrat seat, and Bill Pettit was specifically qualified to win that seat because of his name ID, because of the experiences he's had, you know, et cetera. You know, my seat, a Democrat has it now. My family has lived in that area for many years. I had name ID when I first ran, not because of me, but because of my family's last name. And then I worked and I, you know, busted my butt to keep that seat. But then we didn't keep it when I left. I mean, there's, you know, things move around in.
Well, that's the thing, though. My point is that you there. a good candidate, you would think, in this environment could win. Although I do think that there's a lot of non-Trump Republicans right. still in Connecticut, and that's a hard place to be right now because Trump among Republicans is so popular, and he's actually doing pretty well with independents right now if you look at the numbers.
And however, in Connecticut, it's still a problem, and I'll tell you why. I mean, Connecticut is the third small state in the country, yet it is so diverse in its own way. I mean, you have Fairfield County, for example, where most people will tell you they're not going to vote for a Republican that they don't know and feel comfortable with personally, you know, have an experience with, because I don't support Donald Trump. And then, you know, Eastern Connecticut, you're like, well, I will only support you if you support Donald Trump. So it's a very difficult political landscape to manage because of the president, and that's another part of it. I mean, you're the way you lay it out, Brian, is just find good candidates. Good candidates win. Good candidates don't always win. We've had good candidates that can't win just because of Trump. We have mediocre candidates that will win because of Trump.
So let's talk generally, like outside of the R versus D thing, like Larson in the first. Do you think he can lose?
Can he lose? Yeah, yes.
Do you think he will?
Oh, I hope he doesn't lose.
You want him to keep his seat? Why?
And I think that he has done a good job for his congressional district. I mean, everybody has the right to run. So whether it's Luke Bronin or Gilchrist or anybody else, I mean, certainly everybody has the right to run. Nobody owns a seat and has, you know, the ability to say you can't run against me until I decide I want to retire.
But, I mean, you know,
but I hope he does.
What congressman, I mean, first of all, I have a really good relationship with Congressman Larson. I respect him. And I think Jillian Gilchrist, I've had great conversations with her, and I've met with Luke Bronin forever. I mean, politically, you might not line up with Gilchrist, but she's smart and she's sharp. But here's the thing is that what has he done? Like, what congressperson doesn't bring home money to their district? Like,
there's not much money
in D.C. They all do. And his signature issue is Social Security. My point is that I still think that he has a ton of like institutional support, but you know his signature issue is Social Security. He's never gotten a vote on it. So, I mean, that thing you said. I mean, I just when I see it from where I sit objectively, he's done what everyone else does, which is bring money to their district because they all take the parties all try to take care of their congressmen and women.
He has a lot of issues. I mean, I understand Social Security is has been a big issue for him, but he's had a lot of issues. He's had a lot of issues for the state of Connecticut and nationally. And the reason why he keeps winning is because people believe he's done the right thing. Now, other people are running against him now for the nomination, and those people are going to have to put out their issues. I mean, I've always had an annoyance by a challenger saying it's time for a change. Okay, well, tell me why. You know, it might be time for a change, but tell me why. It's not just because you're sick of waiting to run for office and there's a long-term incumbent.
And I understand
so
Bronin.
So people are going to have to explain. Bronin will have to, and Gilchrist and the other people that are in.
A lot of people don't want him in.
Tell us why so we can make an educated decision.
A lot of people feel Bronin didn't see an avenue at governor, so he needs a path to stay political, and this is the path. And I think that's a fair criticism, but I also think it's a fair criticism to say, you know, well, what have you done in 20 plus years?
Listen,
it's fair to ask
you,
that question.
You run for office.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. What if comparing car insurance rates was as easy as putting on your favorite podcast? With Progressive, it is. Just visit the Progressive website to quote with all the coverages you want. You'll see Progressive's direct rate, then their tool will provide options from other companies so you can compare. All you need to do is choose the rate and coverage you like. Quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Comparison rates not available in all states or situations. Prices vary based on how you buy.
It is a referendum every 2 years when you have to be reelected. You have to say why you should be reelected. There's no question about it. And then people have to make the decision.
And you almost stayed up for the whole 18-inning game. I'm just curious, like, do you think we got to worry about sports and sports betting? Like, in terms of, it just strikes me as something that it really does the cliche tip of the iceberg thing. Because, like, I feel like there's so many things I can question now across the board.
I've been concerned about it since it started. You know, I think this is one of those slippery slopes that you say, all right, well, there's no big deal. about it. Let's make it legal so we can monitor it and we can control it. But it's not being controlled. And I think that this is just the tip of the iceberg.
You think there are players, like prop bets are one thing, like, you know, miss a free throw to get a certain, do you think that it's actually impacting outcomes? Because a regular season game.
I think it could. Don't you think?
Of course.
I mean, I think it very well could. I mean, look at baseball. I mean, you have 181 games. You have all these.
A bunch of games that are so-called irrelevant, yeah. Right?
So, yeah. So nobody's paying attention.
Not
right?
Hurt anybody.
I mean, football's different because it's one game a week and everybody's laser-like focused on that one game and it's, you know, a couple months of a season. But like baseball, I think there's so much opportunity for people to do things and that nobody pays attention to. I mean, they always say when you have, just use politicians, for example, that get themselves in trouble, right? And they steal things or they do things they're not supposed to do.
Right.
It doesn't all of a sudden, you know, one day you steal $5 million, right? It's incremental. You do a little thing at a time and you get away with it. You do a little thing at a time and you get away with it. And I think baseball or sports in general with sports betting is very similar. I think it will be very easy to get away with. And these teams going to Vegas, I think is one of the worst things that we can do.
So now that we have the reality that we have, what do you do? Like, do you get rid of prop bets? People love prop bets. But when you see a baseball pitcher who's got great control throwing a ball 3 feet in front of the plate, or you have players like Terry Rozier, you know, I don't know if it's feigning an injury, but sort of taking himself out of a game so people can hit the under for $100,000. I mean, what do you do?
I'm not an expert in gambling by any means, so I mean, I don't really know the solution to it. But I mean, I think that has to be looked at, right? I think the prop bets have to be looked at because this isn't about what's going on today. It's 2025. I mean, we're going to look at this 10 years from now, 20 years from now, when hopefully they don't, but bad things could really, I mean, this could get really bad. And they're going to look back to this year and say, remember when that happened? Remember when that happened with Rozier? We could have done something about it.
Yeah. Themis Claritas joining here on Brian and Company. Let's get back to politics. I won't give you my hot take. I'll just ask you the state after state after state now. Maryland just said they wouldn't do it, but the gerrymandering push everywhere outside of the census. I just didn't know if you had an opinion.
These are political things. I mean, we do redistricting every 10 years, right? Because the census is done every 10 years. I mean,
that's the way you were taught in civics class.
Right. That's how it happens. And now somebody figured out that we can make this political and we can help ourselves. And then you're off to the races. And that's what's happening. I mean, then you see it. I mean, every day, right? Don't you see a story pop up where, like, this state is now going to do this and that state is now going to do that? And depending on which party is in control in the state, those are the people that will control the redistricting. And they're going to do it to benefit themselves.
Of course. But, like, everyone's doing it off census now. And it's like a race to see who can jury rig enough seats.
Right, it's bad. But I will tell you, as going through redistricting in Connecticut, as I have, you sit down, Republicans and Democrats sit down, and we'll say, oh, this Connecticut House district, because by our state law, we have to have X amount of people in the districts, like 22 to 25,000 people, say, for example, in a House district. So in the past 10 years, the population has gone down in X House district, and so we need to add more people to it. So we're going to take more from another town,
right,
or take more from the town you're in, you know, move it around a little bit. But of course, the Republicans want to take the Republican section of the town and add it, right? The Democrats want to take the Democrat section of the town and add it. But that's part of negotiation. That's one thing, because that's how this works, because census is affecting population and population shifts. But the way that they're doing it now, they've made it so political that that's all they care about.
The president said in Asia today, you know, talked about how the Constitution is pretty clear about a third term. And another civics thing, like I even went back and forth with listeners. If you take over in the middle of a term and it's less than 2 years, you can run twice. So you can run in 2+ terms, but it can't be more than 10 years. And there was a lot of talk about what Trump would try to do to stay in power. He's basically admitted that he can't run for a third term. But what do you anticipate? How do you anticipate the next cycle going? Because I can't imagine that the Republicans in power now nationally don't want to continue implementing what they've been implementing.
Of course they do.
So how do you think they're going to, what do you think it's going to look like?
As far as redistricting goes?
No, I'm not talking, I'm talking presidential politics. No, I'm talking 2028.
Oh, well, I think it's going to look like, you know, J.D. Vance is going to, I'm assuming, want to say, I will just be, if you liked what Donald Trump did, I'm the continuation of Donald Trump. I was his right-hand guy. I was his vice president. I believe what he believes. If you want to continue with the country going in the direction it is and all the great things we've done, then you're going to support me.
So I mean, he'll be the, he's, I mean, the first seat. He's right. The first crack at it. Now, the this leads me, because it's...
Now, that assumes that by the time the presidential campaigning comes, the country's doing well or people are happy, right? If they're not happy, then J.D. Vance has a problem.
Right.
Because he will not be able to extricate himself.
Then on the other side, because of this UNH poll, I don't know if you had a chance to see it, because I'm curious about, do you think Chris Murphy wants to run for president?
I would be shocked if he did not.
Because they did a poll, and they polled, you know, Democratic voters or who they would support, and 12 people got 1% or more, and Murphy's not in that 12.
Well, I just don't think he's as known, or I don't think he's as known. I mean, I think he has wanted... You know, this is a man who started as state representative, then he ran for state senate, then he ran for Congress, then he ran for U.S. Senate. And I think there's probably not one U.S. senator that doesn't look in the mirror every morning when they're brushing their teeth and saying, hey, you know, I should be president. And that's fine. I get it. Right? You're one level down in essence.
You think he will? You think he'll run in 28?
And I think also... He's changed his image a little bit in the past year. Have you noticed, right?
Beard.
We have a little scruff. Yeah, a little hair situation going. I mean, he's trying to be a little more, you know, regular guy kind of appeal to people. And I think that is purposeful. I don't think it's a bad thing that he's doing. You know, I mean, I think that you need to do that. I think he has wanted to become the chief opponent to Donald Trump and what he's doing within his party, because the Democrat Party hasn't really taken a strong position, and the positions they've taken have not helped.
But yet,
like, he wants to be that person.
But I guess my point is that his profile would have been lifted by that. Goes on every single national show that'll ask him.
Well, he has more work to do, but I think he wants to do it. I mean, I think Gavin Newsom, no question. You know, I didn't see the poll, but I'm assuming Gretchen Whitmer.
Yeah, she's low, but she's there. But I mean, it's
Shapiro,
Buttigieg,
Philadelphia,
Newsom, AOC,
I mean, Pennsylvania,
Kamala Harris, Bernie, Pritzker, Bashir, Klobuchar, Kelly, Booker, Shapiro, Whitmer.
I mean, I would guess Newsom, Whitmer, Shapiro. I mean, Shapiro, you know, Shapiro's on the ball. You know, I like him.
Well, he's a moderate.
And I like him. Also, the governor of Maryland.
Westmore.
Yeah, he has been very, you know, he has been looked at by a lot of people as
African American veteran,
and somewhat reasonable and
good profile,
you know, likable.
Yeah,
big deal, because as we talked about before, likability, whether people like that or not,
is
the main reason why people get elected.
10 seconds. Anything else on your mind?
I just have to say that I have been forced to root for the Los Angeles Dodgers. Even though I can't stand the Dodgers, because I cannot support the Blue Jays who beat the Yankees. I can't do it. My father, God rest his soul, would be very upset with me, because he always believed you root for the team that beat you, because then it justifies the beating.
If Vlad Jr. is keeping you up at night as a Yankee fan, you got bigger problems.
Vlad Jr. is a punk.
Even Aroldis Chapman said, I'm not going back to New York.
Aroldis
Chapman's
that's
how bad
a punk,
it is.
Too. He's also a punk. You know what trouble he caused in New York?
I know.
And he makes it like it's our fault.
I know. Themis, thank you as always. I know it's
My
not
pleasure.
Always easy to get here in the morning rush.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. What if comparing car insurance rates was as easy as putting on your favorite podcast? With Progressive, it is. Just visit the Progressive website to quote with all the coverages you want. You'll see Progressive's direct rate, then their tool will provide options from other companies so you can compare. All you need to do is choose the rate and coverage you like. Quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Comparison rates not available in all states or situations. Prices vary based on how you buy.